computer reoriented probably through the end of the week. And at the least, if you wait till noon, you're able to hear it, you know, 3 hours delayed. So live on SiriusXM and delayed on the stream. And this morning, kind of a quiet midweek, pre-Derby week activities. When it came to the training session, two workers, and of course, you can't go a day without Crown Pride doing something. The Japanese entrant worked another half mile this morning, and it was a sharp half mile, but he was being asked today. And it's hard to know what to make, really, of Crown Pride, the way in which he does something virtually every day. I mean, yesterday was inadvertent. He was galloping, and a horse came up inside of him, and he reacted to a horse going by him and dug in, and his rider had to deal with that, and he basically had a little half-mile flourish, as I called it. This morning, though, was a full-fledged half-mile, and was, I think, Dale Romans, right, had the, was it Dale Romans, offered up a workmate, but he's going to work. He's going to work twice more. There'll be no shortage of exposure for Crown Pride the rest of the way. He'll work again Sunday, and then do apparently something next Wednesday. That's his schedule. That's the way they drill. And you know, not to pull out the old chestnut, I've told this story before. Driving home to New York from Louisville, my first Derby, and I remember hearing a DJ. I mean, I think I was just listening to either a talk show or maybe a music. Anyway, the DJs, they were talking, and a DJ said something that has stayed with me forever, and that is that his grandmother. who had, you know, been to dozens of derbies, that her old maxim was, when it came to the Triple Crown, the fittest horse wins the Derby, the fastest horse wins the Preakness, and the best horse, quote unquote, wins the Belmont. Now that's a trite way to summarize it, but there's some merit. And fitness, and you know, having a horse that is absolutely ready to go 10 furlongs at this time of year, that makes a lot of sense. And so you're not going to have to worry about Crown Pride being fit. He gallops, he figure eights, he works every 3 to 4 days. He's getting a full complement when it comes to being ready for the assignment. How much it takes out of him, and how much over the top is he? Hard to know. We'll keep watching. But he was being asked a little bit today to finish, and there was not much of a gallop out. He pretty much pulled up quickly. So just watch him morning after morning. Meanwhile, Rich Strike, who is on the outside looking in, we continue to await basically now the decision from Chad Brown. The anticipation is that early voting won't participate. That has been, I think, fairly well established up till now, but they continue to watch and they continue to monitor the situation. So for now, he's still a part of it. And of course, the horse that is in limbo out of that is Pioneer of Medina, who sits at, call it 20 and a half. But Rich Strike, who was unsure of his next assignment, and Rick Dawson, that owns Rich Strike, and Eric Reed, they continue to consider their options, which could be a run in the Pat Day Mile or wait two more weeks for Preakness. But in the meantime, he went 59-3, and I put that video up. Did it nicely. He's a nice colt and a Keen Ice son. And it's funny that Keen Ice, actually, I'm glad I noted that, because later with Sid, hour two, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid actually wrote this morning in today's TDN his Taking Stock column. He uses Mo Donegal's approach to the classics, and that, of course, included Keen Ice, along with Doolahan and the Patio Prado. Patio Prado. They've had a couple of board hits, and of course Mo Donegal, the focus here, and after Sid kind of framed the conversation with a look back at Donegal's approach, he then launched into a bit of an Uncle Mo, because it feels like Uncle Mo, that Mo Donegal is kind of a hybrid, horse on a pedigree that can be precocious, but is designed as well to make a classic distance. So when we talked to Sid, actually, that's just thinking about, Keen Ice being the sire of Rich Strike. But for now, Rich Strike probably not making it in. They could enter and be an AE. And it's really been it's pretty special for Eric Reed's barn and owner Rick Dawson and Sonny Leone. So they're happy that they've got a saddle cloth and they're part of the scene here at Churchill Downs. The rest of the action was all gallops, and some gallops were pretty spirited, and Unoho seemed to kind of tear around a little bit, and he had some schooling as well. The horse that, again, this morning, there's always leading into Derby a horse that just goes about his business and doesn't have to be flashy, but just kind of floats out there over the track and just does the two circuits and doesn't necessarily wow you every day, but at the same time you recognize how nicely he's going, and that's Cyberknife again this morning, just very sweetly and under control and ears up and just relaxed. And there's a lot to be said for that when you listen to to John Nichols and Gary Young and Mike Welch. Being relaxed counts for a lot, and Cyberknife is that for sure. Zandon with another good morning, just out there. Not a lot to, he's already impressed. Probably just one more important spin. For most trainers, this past workout is the one where if you're trying to do something specific, you do it two works out, and then the last work is something of a maintenance. Others others will will ask for for a little bit more, but a lot of the time we see the last work being just a maintenance effort. A lot of the fillies this morning actually had time to kind of watch them. I finally got yesterday I saw Venti Valentine go off. Today I got to see her a little bit more, and Nostalgic as well for Belmont and Nest, I got to learn more. I got to find out more about Shahama. the other Pletcher. You know, the Pletcher I did not notice this morning, and I did put up that picture because the Pletcher camp gets out there first every morning at 7:30. I did not see Goddess of Fire this morning. I'll have to find out where she went. Kathleen O., another second morning at Churchill, and I assume that Shug is in attendance back there on the backside. I almost put up a picture of Summer is Tomorrow, who came out at the end of the session, and if there wasn't a saddle cloth, if there wasn't the neon yellow saddle cloth, it would have been tough to tell him from the pony. He's got his shoulders slumped and his head down, and I mean, they looked fine, but he's clearly just one of those easygoing horses. Some come out and they're bright, and their heads are up, and they're looking around. Summer is Tomorrow feels like a horse that I've seen Maydan. This is nothing special. So for me. Summer is Tomorrow. Who else? The McPeak team. Yep, all the McPeakers were out and about. And in fact, Smile Happy shows up on the. He's galloping. If you look at the Rich Strike work, that's the horse in the foreground is Smile Happy. So, a workaday training session. Cyberknife actually, instead of an early morning Asmussen camp gallop, we did see Cyberknife at the end of the session, and I may have gotten a little bit of video, but Mike Welch asked me something, and so I kind of caught my took my focus away from Cyberknife for a second, so I think I just got a little snippet. I go back and later and look through all of these. So anyway, I don't want to call it mundane, but it was a very simple and laid back session. They will continue to ratchet up in intensity as the mornings unfold. I do apologize, as I've mentioned, I can't be here Saturday and Sunday. And so you got plenty of support if you haven't been watching yet the Churchill feed with Joe Christofek and Schaap, interviews with trainers and owners, etc. 1 hour, 7 to 8 mornings, and you can catch the replay as well. It's well worth it. They do a really, it's a tremendous job. That whole show concept has evolved over the years and is valuable. So there's an option, and they show other works from previous mornings that you may not have seen. So it's well worth checking out. A couple of things, and we'll get back into plenty of Derby and Oaks conversation as the morning unfolds. We've got Dick Powell coming up. Happy Valley is underway, and in fact, we're just a minute away from the sixth race. We'll get the seventh, eighth, and ninth from Dick. The light is flashing for the sixth race. This felt like a favorite that I put up the form to win earlier for the fifth race, and the favorite was very tough, and the favorite looks very tough here as well. The one, Exponential, both of the favorites, there's a co-favorite essentially, Gang of Brothers. Actually, Exponential is floated up to 4-1, and I had that actually is a good number. But Gang of Brothers is actually now 4-5. So they kind of flip-flopped. Interesting. In the last 5-6 minutes since I last looked. So we'll go over the 7th, 8th, and 9th with Dick. The one race we played, the 5th, was very chalky. Later, we got Seth. We've got a visit with John Dooley. We'll take a look at the Wednesday action at Horseshoe Indianapolis. Got some racing other review to look at. I got Seth Merrill later. I'm sure Seth will have taken in the Keeneland action. And got a couple of other news and notes. And, of course, Belmont underway tomorrow. And we told you about, we had the Finger Lakes kickoff. They've had two nice days, over a million on opening day and just under a million yesterday. So off and running at the Flakes. We're going to visit first this morning with Alan Foreman. And I got to get Alan in because I'm sure, like a lot of you, these news pieces that are coming out on a daily basis regarding the states and opting in or opting out or doing neither, as West Virginia noted yesterday, they're not taking any action one way or the other for now. And I wanted Alan to explain it because this is the complexity involved here is quite extensive and concerning and a little confusing, truth be told. And so Alan will clarify what opting in or opting out, what it entails, and how it affects the way things are going to proceed. And Alan Foreman joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Alan, the first states that we heard from, I know I saw the California news. They were the first, and they said that they were opting in, and Minnesota as well for Canterbury, and then New Jersey, Maryland, Texas saying no, and of course you can address the Maryland scenario, and then West Virginia essentially said we're not doing anything, but that might be interpreted as a no by HISA. Explain what opting in entails, essentially, and what it means in either direction.
Sure. So there are provisions in, some people call it HISA, HISA, however it's pronounced, in two respects, with respect to racing commissions opting in and opting out. So right now we're talking about the collection of assessments pursuant to the budget that has been issued by HISA, and now for which all covered persons in racing who are covered by HISA are going to be required to pay a share of. And under this statute, the statute contemplated that racing commissions could what we call opt in. That is, they could agree to allocate the cost of a state or a jurisdiction's share of the assessment and allocate that equitably among all covered persons in that jurisdiction, assess it, collect it, and pay it to HISA on a monthly basis. So it's done on a monthly basis. And what commissions are required to do right now is to make that decision. Because the rubber now hits the road, the money has to get collected, the fees have to get paid, and the statute requires that the commissions must make a determination and notify the authority as to whether or not they intend to be the assessment and collection agency or not. And so what you see now are some commissions saying they're opting in and are willing to do it, and some that are opting out and saying they are either not willing to do it or can't do it because of some impediment under state law which prohibits them from doing so. And then we still have a number of jurisdictions that have not yet weighed in. If a commission determines not to opt in, then HISA has provided, of course the statute provides, that then the authority is responsible for assessing those fees among all covered persons in a state or a jurisdiction and then collecting that money, or they can, and what they're doing in this case is they are deputizing the racetrack to make the determination of the formula, collect those monies amongst all covered persons, and pay that to the authority subject to the authority's review of whether or not the racetrack's allocation is fair and equitable. And I think that's a very messy proposition. We had very substantial concerns about that, which we have pointed out to the authority. But nonetheless, that is the method that was approved by the Federal Trade Commission, and that's where we are now. So, for example, let's take Maryland. Maryland's commission elected not to opt in. So under the rules that have been established by HISA, the Strana Group, which controls the thoroughbred tracks in Maryland, is charged with the responsibility of making the determination of what each covered person's share of Maryland's fee is going to be. Covered persons include the racetrack themselves, which we think is a conflict of interest, but the racetracks, the horsemen, the breeders, the veterinarians, the jockeys, we believe the advanced deposit wagering companies, the off-track betting businesses, anyone who benefits from racing is, and who has to register with HISA, or the authority, is required to pay a proportionate share, and it's up, at least in Maryland, for example, and in those jurisdictions that have elected not to opt in, it's for the racetrack to make the determination as to what each group share is. They then have to collect it and pay it to HISA on a monthly basis.
Okay. A couple of questions, and looking at what T.D. Thornton wrote in TDN this morning, just noting a quote from Commissioner J.B. Akers in West Virginia, we can't even tell anyone how much this is going to cost. How is any state able to make this determination, Alan, not knowing the costs involved?
Well, they know the cost for the next 6 months because every state has been notified by the authority of what their state share is of a budget for this year of $14 million. Okay, so West Virginia does know its share. Maryland knows its share. Kentucky, New York, all racing states have been sent a letter by the authority telling them what their respective share is of the total budget and how that was calculated. Okay, and we've had some disagreements as it's gone through the adoption process as to the formula, but the FTC has given to the authority some flexibility with respect to calculating the formula, and what the authority appears to have done is to try to make it as equitable as possible by not punishing the small states versus the larger states, and are actually, in some respects, passing a larger share of the costs along to the larger states as opposed to the smaller states, West Virginia being considered appropriately or not one of the smaller states. So they know. And if the commission in West Virginia had elected to opt in, then they would make the calculation based upon what West Virginia's share is among all the covered persons. They would issue that assessment, and they would collect it and pay it to the authority. I saw a quote in the article that by not opting in, now the horsemen in West Virginia have to pay West Virginia's share because it's based on a per start fee, and that is absolutely incorrect. And so what it will happen in West Virginia now, assuming that the authority makes the determination that West Virginia has determined not to opt in, is that the two racetracks in West Virginia, Charlestown, which is Penn Gaming, and Mountaineer, will have to make those calculations, spread them equitably among all covered persons, not horsemen, including the tracks themselves, collect that money, and then pay it to the authority on a monthly basis. So it's actually pretty straightforward. It's just messy in terms of implementation because asking the tracks to do it rather than the commissions, who we believe, and when I say we, I'm talking for the THA and our groups. I don't speak for HISA or HISA. It's a lot easier for the commissions to make those determinations, make the assessment, collect the monies because they have the authority to do so, rather than the racetracks doing it. So I think we're getting into some what could be potentially messy territory.
What does the assessment cover? What is this budget essentially paying for?
So I have not seen the budget. There are some people who have. I'm not sure how detailed it is. But you can assume that it involves the startup costs for the authority, personnel, office space, whatever startup costs they've incurred. And I would suspect that a substantial portion of the assessment is legal fees, fighting the two lawsuits that have been filed, one of which West Virginia is a plaintiff in the suit, and to pay the cost of the ongoing litigation. I think that's driven the cost up substantially. And we know the HBPA case may or may not continue to be litigated. The United States District Court threw out their attempt to seek injunctive relief. There is one more case that is sitting in the, I think, the Eastern District of Kentucky. I guess we could all speculate as to the success of that case. That is, I believe, the case that the West Virginia Racing Commission and some other commissions are plaintiffs in. But as long as the litigation continues, the industry and conversely, all covered persons are paying for the cost of that litigation and any other litigation that might go forward, so or might happen subsequently. So that's where the bulk of the costs are now. And we're only talking in 2022 of the safety program, which goes into effect on July 1. It does not cover the anti-doping program, and over the next, I would say, 3 to 4 months, the development of the anti-doping program and what the potential cost of that program and what that will mean to the overall budget, will be the subject of, I think, intense discussion.
And we did see that that HISA had stated they will have an announcement regarding that portion of their controls and their management in terms of a partner.
I saw the same thing you did. They've at least indicated that there'll be an announcement sometime in the next few weeks. I would assume it's going to be around the Derby, because there's always a major announcement of some kind around the Derby. So I would expect, I have no inside information, so it's just, it's my speculation. But I would anticipate that we'll hear something next week, if not the week after, prior to Preakness, maybe up to Belmont. And then we'll have reason to at least expect how the anti-doping program will develop going forward. There are no proposed regulations. That the entire regulatory adoption process will take place over the next 6 months, and I think that will be the subject of intense discussion.
Alan, on a couple of these related the intricacies, and in terms of budgetary percentages, what is the speculative increase in cost associated with how this is going to be administered? Does anybody have has anybody floated a number? 10%, 15%, and then the obvious question, where is it going to come from? I mean, nobody seems to want to address this.
Well, we know where it's coming from. We know that the costs of the operation of the authority is going to come from the industry, from covered persons. That's everybody who is in one way, shape, or form benefiting from the industry. I mean, the definition of covered persons under the statute is very broad, okay? I think currently the estimation is that we spend about $30 million a year in the industry on drug testing alone. And I think the sense is that there are efficiencies and ways to do it better and save money. That's going to be for the authority to determine. It leads to the second point that I made earlier. There's an opt-in and there's an opt-out. There is an expectation in the statute that the authority is going to enter into agreements with the racing commissions for the commissions to provide the services that are necessary for the authority to go forward. You know, the authority was always deemed to be an oversight agency, okay? It was never intended that the authority would step in, take over the operations, daily operations of a safety program or an anti-doping program or drug testing or whatever. I know you hear people who say, well, the authority or USADA couldn't do the drug testing because we do 300,000 samples a year and they do 30,000 samples. It was never contemplated that either USADA or HISA was going to do that. It was that the states would continue to do it subject to authority oversight. And so what is happening right now is the authority is in discussions with each racing commission to enter into an agreement that essentially deputizes the racing commissions to continue to perform the functions that they're currently performing for the authority and for the authority to oversee and ensure compliance. Okay, so when we talk about costs, there may be some incremental additional costs related to the authority, but it, I think, anticipated that it would be number one, business as usual, particularly in those jurisdictions, I like to refer to the Mid-Atlantic, who have already upped their game on the safety program. The Mid-Atlantic strategic plan to reduce equine fatalities was built into the safety program, as was the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance. So for those jurisdictions that are in compliance, it's not a heavy lift, and there will not be significant additional costs. For those jurisdictions that are not compliant, there will be an additional cost, but I think the authority is going to look to help them to reduce those costs by providing services that those jurisdictions may not be able to provide. And there may be some additional costs with the anti-doping program, particularly with respect to out-of-competition testing. But I think that's the challenge for the authority. And so I think the biggest problem that has faced the authority is the aggressive time frame that they've been placed under to get this program going. You know, it became effective January 1, 2021. The authority nominating committee had to be appointed, and they appointed the standing committees, the final board. They started the regulatory process. And I think that July 1, 2022 was far too ambitious a startup or something of this magnitude. And so I think, and I don't think the authority would disagree, that if they had had until January 1, 2023 to put this all together, there would have been more time for interaction and transparency with the industry and with the racing commissions. And I expect that, look, the safety program is going to start and it'll all come together collectively, I think, in a non-punitive way. And there is now time that I think they'll have time to massage those rules and other rules and have more time to carefully consider the appropriate anti-doping program. As I said, you know, quite some time ago, if the USADA proposed anti-doping program had gone into effect on July 1, it would have been a very chaotic situation for the industry and could have been very costly.
Alan Forman is joining us here about a week or 10 days into the state's decisions coming forward about opting in or opting out to HISA and taking on the responsibilities of fee collection and dissemination, with California and Minnesota in and New Jersey, Maryland, and Texas so far out. It does feel like there's lots of bobbing and weaving on a lot of these topics, because I thought it was interesting how New Jersey, how Monmouth asked the commission to reevaluate last year's punitive whip rule, and indeed the commission backed off so that when Monmouth starts their meet, they can start with the rules that HISA is instituting regarding whip use. So it, you know, there are some things that people are you know, tying on to Allen, and then, you know, there's some of these more complex arenas that, you know, feel like, you know, we're going to have to watch how it plays out.
Well, Monmouth did the right thing. I think the frustration from the Mid-Atlantic standpoint was the, by the way, the authorities' grip rule is the Mid-Atlantic rule. We adopted the rule 2 years ago. It's in effect. We had no ability to force jurisdictions to adhere to that rule, but a number of the jurisdictions in the Mid-Atlantic have been adhering to that. So, again, for the riders in Maryland and Delaware, Pennsylvania, there's no heavy lift there because that is HISA rule is the Mid-Atlantic rule. The New Jersey Commission didn't want to do that. You know, they imposed a very strict ban on the use of the riding crop. But they are now forced to, and that's the whole point of uniformity. That's what HISA is all about, is one rule. And so Monmouth's meet starts before the July 1 safety program goes into effect. And so they did the right thing by, instead of changing course at midstream, to get the rule in place when their meet begins. So that was the right thing to do. And look, we've encouraged jurisdictions to make the changes that we saw coming, and that's why we've done them. The horsemen in West Virginia have balked at many of the Mid-Atlantic strategic plan requirements, particularly as it relates to medication. But you know what? When the medication rules go into effect, they're going to have to adhere to them. For those jurisdictions in the Mid-Atlantic that have been adhering to the Mid-Atlantic plan and the prongs of the national medication program, National Uniform Medication Program, there's not going to be much, if any, change. For those jurisdictions that have refused to do so, it will be changed. So the sooner that they get on board with it, the better it's going to be for them and their horsemen and for the industry. And while I may sound critical of West Virginia, I will tell you on the safety front, one of the biggest improvements that we've seen as we measure compliance and improvement in statistics in the Mid-Atlantic, at least with respect to the safety program, have been the tracks in West Virginia. So it's a mixed bag. But I think that, and that's the reason why I think HISA is going to be a good thing, or HISA, is that it's going to bring uniformity, and it's going to bring some of these jurisdictions that are not up to standard in our current rules up to a uniform rule.
Alan? I appreciate you know, the clarifications and the background on this, because I think people are seeing the headlines and you know, hearing bits and pieces, and we need to check in with you on a regular basis to keep it all clear.
Well, Steve, it looks like it's going to be messy starting up. I hope that's not the case. Something this dramatic, I mean, this is a major dramatic shift in the way the industry has done business. I mean, you go back decades, six decades or more. This is a monumental shift, and so I think it's folly to think that it was going to be this smooth transition and everything's going to be fine. First year is going to be tough, and then I think they'll hit their stride. They're trying real hard. This is not easy stuff. It's real easy to be critical. It's real easy to fight to stop it. I happen to be one of those among others who don't think the status quo is working. And so I would hope that the racing commissions and those in the industry who are facing this federal law, and it is the law unless a court says no, would work with HISA to make this a reality and as smooth as possible. It's not intended to be punitive. It's intended to be a benefit to our business. And I just think we ought to just take it in that vein and try to make it work. And I know the authorities' attitude is once they get out of these aggressive time constraints that they're going to be far more willing to sit down and work through a lot of the issues that we have been pointing out to them.
Well, and that was the message that Lisa Lazarus delivered a couple of weeks ago too, at RCI, just, you know, to have everybody understand the intricacies and the challenges involved, and to give them you know, a chance to get it right. I mean, we were talking about it this morning, actually, here at Churchill with the clocker in the clocker stand, and you know, made the point that certainly the people, Lazarus and Charlie Sheeler, you got people that demand respect from everybody, and so if we want the greater good, we got to give them, you know, got to give them some leeway and you know, try to, you know, try to make it better for everybody.
And I Steve, I understand the independent members who we don't know have been tremendous. I mean, I talk to people on the inside as best I can, and I try to get a sense of what's going on. And they talk to me, and they want to, you know, they want to know what's going on in the marketplace. You know, what's the word on the street? But I hear that the particularly we know who the industry members are, and they're all very good, strong people. But that the independent members, excuse me, have been very engaged and very helpful. So we got to give it a chance. We got to give it time. You know, we'll make it work, and we're going to defend the industry to the extent that it becomes punitive, and we're going to work with them because this presents an opportunity, not, you know, it really is an opportunity. We need to change the tone. We need to change the dynamic. We need to change the atmosphere. And that's going to all be to our benefit if we can just get this going.
Alan Foreman, everybody. Alan, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
There it is, and wanted to make sure everybody understood what you know, what they're reading and what they're seeing when it comes to the HISA program. I want you to get ready very quickly to turn around and go after this seventh race. Let's get Dick Powell in case, and we got about 3 or 4 minutes. They're milling. As it happens, as Alan was coming on, I was about to tell you that in the in that sixth race at Happy Valley, in fact, wire-to-wire win by Exponential, and ended up as second choice, paid $8.50. That was all right. And Gang of Brothers settled for third, and Exponential ended up being, you know, a very good play. There's Dick Powell. Dick, good morning.
Steve, good morning.
Let's quickly get either the pick three play, if that's what you've got. And go ahead, real quick.
Yes, I do. In race 7 coming up, I have 1-5-10. Race 8 is really wide open. There's 7 contenders. I went 4-6-7-8. A lot of them have been in against each other, so they're hard to separate. And then race 9 on paper looks like a two-horse race between the 1 and the 8. So 1-5-10 in the upcoming 7th race, 4-6-7-8 in the race 8, and 1-8 in race 9.
So $24 play, essentially, 3x4x2. And if people want to take a saver, Form to Win has basically given in to the power of the two favorites in the last couple of races. Even though Exponential went off as the second choice, it basically had Exponential and Gang of Brothers, and the betting public hammered Gang of Brothers down to even money, and we ended up getting value, actually, on Exponential. In here, though, the three, Wind and Grass, Dick, 17-1, and Wind and Grass, he owns the best single performance at three quarters, and on average, he's got the best numbers in terms of this group. So 17-1 if you're looking for value.
Yeah, he's dropping in class, but he has back class, so yes, he is dangerous.
All right, let's. We got the lights are flashing, and in terms of favorites, the one, Rewarding Together, Frankie Lohr, and there's our man, Matthew Chadwick, who I've really taken a liking to. Then look at
he has a winner tonight.
Yeah, and 12-1 for Starbright was the one of yours, and Lyrical Motion, 6-1. Those are the three. You left out Sky Forever, the 8 in here. All right, let me, I don't want to miss the break. As this group gets ready to go, the 1200, the Zap Sang Handicap.
And the rail,
oh, wait
the
a minute.
Rail
I'm
was
sorry.
Out,
I'm sorry.
And they upgraded the track speed to good to firm. It's been very fast tonight and very inside speed favoring.
Looks like we've got about three more to load. Well, then that, you know, it's kind of funny then, Dick, that Exponential, you know, didn't take the money in the sixth, and that it gravitated to Gang of Brothers because he did figure to be on the lead, and he basically just led every step.
Third front end run of the night for Lyle Ewinson.
This is the MinFat handicap.
Here we go.
The wrinkle motion on the inside, racing this time. Forte missed it. Missed it by about three quarters. Righteous Doctrine goes back. And Jolly Goodheart surging forward here with Star Bright, Lyrical Motion. Cormac Teddy gets around, we're roaring together in the middle, and they're too clear on Wind and Grass, and then came Sky Forever over on the rail. Midfield, California Redwood next, they're running this along, and then came Forte, a length and a half away, three to Toronado Phantom, and he's back towards the rear with Righteous Doctrine, 12 from top end to tail. At the 700 metres, Jolly Goodheart in front, over Star Bright, margin three quarters, Cormac Teddy's done it tough, he's three wide, no cover. Lyrical Motion with a perfect run and then came Rewarding together. Favourites really being pushed up, coming down the side to hold his position. Sky Forever, Wind and Grass, California Redwood sweeping round the outside. Forte, Toronado Phantom and Righteous Doctrine. Jolly Goodheart, Lyrical Motion there to strike is Star Bright. Forte, Rewarding together, starting to get a second go on. Sky Forever, California Redwood, Lyrical Motion in front. Look at Sky Forever and Rewarding together over the top. Rewarding together, Sky Forever, Rewarding together, got there, Rewarding together, Sky Forever, they ran past Lyrical Motion, and they're not sure fourth, they took my eye off that, Forte was finishing off on the inside, California Redwood, Wind and Grass, and then came Star Bright, Righteous Doctrine.
Well, there's Matthew Chadwick and Frankie Lohr, even money by the time the gates opened, and first leg, the pick three, accomplished.
Yeah, he carried the high weight and did it very nicely. He was in Class 4. He's moved up to Class 3, and he's now won two and a second at Class 3. So he will move up from this race, and he'll wind up in Class 2. But also, the great thing when you move up in class in Hong Kong, Steve, is the class levels run for huge money. So when you go from Class 3 to Class 2, you're going from $1.5 million Hong Kong dollars to $2.4 million Hong Kong dollars. So you don't mind moving up and carrying weight or facing better horses because it's for a lot more money.
Rewarding together, 1, 8, and 10. And the 8, who was the 8? The eight was Sky Forever, who actually floated up by the time the gates opened, and 10 was Lyrical Motion. So, all right, first leg through, and 26 minutes to the eighth. It's been a fairly formful day. There was a couple of decent prices. The third and fourth had a couple of decent numbers, but otherwise it's been a pretty formful night at Happy Valley. Dick, let's look back at the weekend, and of course, Golden 60. It's hard not to be impressed, and it's hard not to start the recap talking about, you know, his resurgence, as it were.
He is the second highest turf runner in the world. Life is Good is ahead of him, one or two at the dirt horses, and then I can't remember which European is ahead of him, but his last race was great. This race was great. He stalked on the rail, saved ground, attended a pretty good pace. Not outrageously fast, but when Vincent Hedges pressed the button, race was over. I mean, he came in 22.67, did it with looks like lots in the tank. California Spangler gamely held on for second, but boy, that was a tough race because he was under pressure every step of the way, so I don't know where they go now with California Spangle. He's blazing fast, but it's going to be tough for him to continue, especially to face Golden 60. Now, the great thing is Golden 60 is now back on track to go to Japan for Group 1 in June going a mile. So that'll be fantastic for him to go over there and take on those tough horses. So Golden 60 now the leading money earner in Hong Kong history and just keeps doing everything correctly. I'm a son of Medalli d'Oro. Doesn't get enough credit for this turf runners, but obviously Medalli d'Oro can get anything. So Golden 60 wins the Champions Mile. Earlier in the card, Wellington, just such a hard-knocking sprinter. Man, he's tough. And he won in 108.09. Third group won for him. But his, I don't know how to describe it, his middle part of the final quarter was just brilliant because he was, there was a whole pack of horses, and then he just surges to pull away from them. It was just amazing to watch. Computer Patch held on for second. Skyfield, who usually breaks better, rallied up for third. It was the usual blanket finish for second. Sight Success was disappointing, and Master 8 scratched due to sickness. So Wellington does it again and just keeps rolling along, and Alexi Bedell gets a big, big win. And then the last race, the last group one of the night, was the QE2. And Romantic Warrior, who has just had this remarkable season. He started out, Steve, as an unraced maiden, rated at 52. He ran his first two races at Happy Valley, going 6 furlong. Now, that's not the stereotypical path to group success and Hong Kong Derby success. And then every time they asked this horse the question, he had the right answer. His only stub was that Hong Kong Classic at a mile and eighth when he drew outside. California Spangle had the inside. California Spangle had the big advantage, wound up beating it. But then he came back and won the Hong Kong Derby. And then he came back and won the Group 1 QE2 Cup over a good field. I know it lacked international participation, but this was a good, good race. And Romantic Warrior is now rated 122. He's gone from 52 to 122 in 8 career starts this year. That's pretty darn good. And just has, the world at his feet in these middle distance races over there. So, they still have the mile and a half ladies' purse race coming up. I don't know if he'll try that, but man, he's just amazing horse. And he just was dominant. Another one who ran 2 flat last quarter, 22 and change. Just does it easy as could be. And big, big win for Karis Teton and a huge win for Danny Shum, because not only does Danny win the race, he runs 1-2 in a group one. And he picked this horse out of the Hong Kong International Sales. It was an expensive $4.8 million Hong Kong dollars, so probably $500,000-$600,000 U.S. Picked him out, developed him, and, wow, he's had a sensational year, and he's only 4. He has a couple of big years of racing in Hong Kong. So Romantic Warrior wins the QE2. The one thing I was right about was, who got second there? Tourbillon Diamond at 20-1. That was a big help on the night because Master 8 scratched. I like California Spangle, but obviously he couldn't beat Golden 60. Wellington was good, but I didn't really do well on the sprint. But in the QE2, did have the exact, because my theory was the Galileo horse, Roman Emperor. Russian Emperor, excuse me. I thought he would pay the price for a very demanding stretch duel on his last start. And it looked like he did, because when the running got serious, he wasn't going to be Romantic Warrior, but he faded to 4th. So Tourbillon Diamond at 20-1 completes a pretty nice exact in the QE2. So really good racing at Sha-Tin. And we're going to be at Sha-Tin a while, Steve, because we race there today. We're back at Sha-Tin on Wednesday, and then we're back at Sha-Tin the following Saturday. So we have that schedule where they'll probably run all the all-weather races at Sha-Tin next Wednesday when we're on the air.
Excellent. All right, good. Look forward to that. And I certainly was impressed with Golden 60. He's he's writing his own script, Dick.
It's a cliche, but he's a push-button horse. Gets out of the gate, Vincent puts him where he wants, and then his cruising speed takes nothing out of him. So then when they get to the point where you have to push the button, his acceleration, and it's not... I wouldn't call it breathtaking, like some horses just quicken so fast, but it's just so smooth. And next thing, he's running way faster than his rivals are running. You know, it's just amazing to see him. And California Spangle had a fairly easy time of it on the front end, but when he loomed up next to him, that was it. That race was over. So he's recovered his form from last year. From early in the year, he did have that hiccup this year with the one race where Vincent might have given him too much to do, and then the other race when the turf came up yielding. So he'll go to Japan. Hopefully he'll get farm ground, which is the norm in Japan. They run miles in 32, you know, no problem. So he'll fit very well. They're a big field, though. He'll have to contend with that. He'll have to contend with, I believe, a left-hand course. And but it'll be interesting because clearly he has the talent.
Numbers are back from the 7th, rewarding together 440, 240, Sky Forever, and Lyrical Motion. Fill out the Exotic and the Omni and the Tri and the Exacta, Quinella, etc. All right. 16 minutes to the Xing Ping. I love the stake names. The Xing Ping handicap is next, and you spread here a little bit, right?
Yes, and I didn't get a chance to look at Form to Win, but I would think Form to Win would be perfect for this kind of race where they're all hard knocking horses that are raced multiple times, and yet. When I wrote down the early odds, an hour ago, there were seven single-digit horses. Favored at that point, number 8, Viva Hunter, was 4.7-1. And there was a whole bunch between 6, 7, and 8-1. Many of them come out of the same race on April 13th, March 23rd against Packing Award. So they've been kind of knocking heads against that. Viva Hunter drew post 11, so I was going to throw him out, but then you got Joe, and Joe seems to be able to win going two turns from the outside post, especially if he has the speed, which this one does. So I came down to 4, Crossford, Zach Pert, and John Size, ran against Romantic Warrior 2 back, didn't run bad last time out. The 6, Beauty Glory, Luke Ferrara's Tony Cruz, has real good speed, led all the way against Packin' Award, 2 back, and then Viva Hunter, and also co-partner Fion, a lightly raced horse who had good international form before coming to Hong Kong. Just looks like he has that class here, but I mean, you could take those four, take them out of your equation, and come up with 4 different ones, and I couldn't argue with them.
Well, and in fact, I'm doing just that. Game Player Times, who actually has taken money, is 5-1. The 9, Doug White with Lyle Houston, 5-1 in here. Dick had been.
He was 14-1 before.
Yeah, exactly. And he and King's Capital, King's Capital's 20-1 here. Those are the two in terms of and we're going, what, 1650 here. And
yep.
Interesting. Well, if you're looking for a couple of different options, the 9 and the 5, Game Player Times and King's Capital. So when you say wide open, I'm seeing what you mean.
Oh, you could. It's hard to eliminate anybody in here, and I'm not an all button guy. I have friends who are very good at it. I'm not. I hit the all button four to five always wins. But I could solve. I mean, I went four deep, and if I would have had a stronger opinion in the previous race, I would have gone a little deeper in this one. But it's and especially going two turns. The 3 draws a bad post. The 8 draws a bad post. But like I said, at least it has Joe. So they drew the outside. They have not a short run into the first turn, but it takes a while to get settled in these races, Steve, because they come out, they get into that first elbow, then you got a little bit of straightaway that you see in the 6 following races. Then you have a really sharp right-hand turn. Then they go down the backstretch. So if you're parked out, you're not getting over. I mean, you're out there. And the best you can do is maybe get cover behind someone else who's parked out. So it can be a tough trip, but at least Joe's horse from post 11 has natural speed. I don't think he has to use him too hard. And he'll be interesting because I think he could control the race because I don't see a whole lot of other speed in here. Maybe the 9. So, and maybe the 6 has some speed. So, this is what makes the races so tough. And then you factor in a 17-pound weight spread from, you know, the top 2 weighted horses at 133 pounds, and the 9 is 118, which, considering how good Hewittson and White are doing tonight, and you know, the others are 117, 116. So you got a big weight spread. So you get a wide open race, a bunch of horses that look evenly matched. And then at that point, to me, weight and post position are huge factors. So I wound up, other than the 11, I stayed within the middle of the post positions and also within the middle of the weight range.
Interesting. Well, you've got the 4, 6, 7, 8. Crossford is 9-1. Beauty Glory, the 6, is 9-1. Co-partner Flan is 13-1. And Viva Hunter, the lone short price at 2-1. So trying to get live to the 9th, to the nightcap in Dick's Pick 3 with the 4, 6, 7, 8. And I just put up the form to win snapshot using the 5 and the 9. That just sort of confirms how wide open this is. Dick, we're going to wrap up. I got Sid coming in for Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. But we're a week out from Derby when we talk next. We'll have field set, and of course you'll have Oaks and Derby Day analysis at Brisnet?
No.
No, huh?
I will not.
Oh, so you will not?
No, I'm kind of cutting back on some things. And
well,
as much as I like doing it, I'm kind of addicted to doing it. I decided to pull the plug.
Well then.
I'm sorry, it's not like I'm not following it.
Well, in that case, you will be called upon for opinion reveals on these airwaves.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Outstanding. Well, great. I'm personally, I understand that it's money out of your pocket, but our listeners will be the lucky beneficiaries.
Well, the theory is I can make up for that at the window. So.
There you go. All right. Well, we're going to lean on you for some ideas and for some plays. Dick, I appreciate it, and we will talk, and we will get analysis from Dick Powell for Derby Oaks next week. Dick, good luck the rest of the way at HK. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Take care.
Let's take a break here. We're 5 minutes into the hour, and thanks to Alan Foreman and Dick getting us rolling. Sid is standing by. We'll talk to Sid Fernando next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. And we got John Dooley, I promised, John Dooley, for a look at the opening moments of Horseshoe Indiana so far. Who else? What is wrong with me? Who else we got? Oh, we got Seth. Seth's Wednesday. Seth Merrow. I'm sure Seth will have some opinions. Gus Alonzo at the end of the show. We'll get... and we owe Gus a big thank you last week, right? What a great job by Gus. That $20 best bet winner. So he's got Keeneland opinions. Seth may have them as well. I only looked at one race at that turf feature today at Keeneland. So that's really the only one I kind of looked at closely. But tricky card at Indiana with a bunch of maiden specials, including Open Company today at Horseshoe. Are we just going to call it? We can call it Horseshoe, right? There's no other Horseshoe anything. So we can, we'll just call it Horseshoe. Makes it easier. Hour two, Sid is next. And if you didn't see his Taking Stock piece at TDN, pull it up and follow along, and we'll flesh it out. We'll also get his final thoughts about the sale. There was also a digital, I didn't get a chance to mention it Monday because there was so much going on, but Fasic had another digital sale, and people are really appreciating the immediacy. And in fact, John Fradkin, I think I retweeted it. John Fradkin had a great tweet this morning, saying that this is really good for the business because these are racehorses thought of as illiquid assets, but being able to, pop your horse into a digital sale on immediate timing makes them liquid, and that it's a positive, and that was getting plenty of traction. So I'll let Sid sound off on that. There's also Friday, after the meet ends at Keeneland, there's a Horses of Racing Age sale, and I did see that. I haven't talked to Joe Bessinger about it, but he's going to make B-Doc available for people to buy. After breaking the maiden Sunday at Keeneland, 92 buyer, we should actually reach out to the Eagles. And I mean, they're busy. They got the draft starting tomorrow, but Brian Dawkins, B-Doc should buy B-Doc. Who can make this happen? All right, we'll work on that. Back after this with Sid.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing.